Good morning and a happy Sunday, and welcome to On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and as every Sunday, I'll be here for the full hour trying to give you some news, some current events, and of course, my topic of the week. And this week, you know, there's some history between black people and Native Americans. Strong history. History that has been forgotten, not told, and there's a reason why it has not been told. I'm going to get into that later on with my special guest, and I can't wait for you guys to hear her and meet her and to introduce her to you. She herself is of the native people of this land, and when I tell you that she is a wealth of knowledge, she is truly a wealth of knowledge. But I gotta be honest, I mean, she told me some things that even made your boy clutch his pearls, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't even prepared for the things that she told me. And I researched them and I looked them up, and they are all true. So sit back, listen to her. But first, before we get started, we of course have the Petty. He's going to break down to us how incredibly accurate he was last week. And I hope you listened, because he put some money in your pocket if you did. We're going to have his picks for today, tomorrow, and Thursday's game. But first, we're going to do what I like to do the most, and that's give you my spin on last week's current events and news topics. So I hope you're feeling great, because I'm feeling great and I've got lots to say. So let's get right to it. Quite honestly, this is one of those news cycles from the past week where so much has gone on. There's no way I'm going to be able to touch on even most of the things that have happened just over the weekend in this world. But as a news guy, there are a couple of things that did stand out to me. And one of those things did happen right here in the city. Two Sundays ago, right here, I made the topic of my show, Catholic Priests and Their History of Molestation Within the Catholic Church. Now, honestly, it was received well by a lot of people, but for some people, it didn't sit well with them at all. And I got hit up quite a bit about how unfair I was being to the Catholic religion in singling them out with priests doing this kind of thing and exhibiting this kind of behavior, because Protestant churches are also known for pastors to have cheated on their wives with multiple women within their congregation, to prey on young girls and get them pregnant. All of those things are true. Absolutely true. No problem. But that is different from there being a systemic generational problem within the organization, and the organization defending it with billions and billions of dollars. The reason why I bring that up again is because just this past week, the Catholic Church has been found to have paid Maryland lobbyists more than $200,000 to help limit or prevent abuse lawsuits. That's according to the Baltimore Sun. According to the Baltimore Sun, for years, the three Roman Catholic dioceses operating parishes in Maryland have successfully lobbied lawmakers to keep sexual abuse survivors from filing lawsuits against the church. An Edgewater attorney, who was abused 5 decades ago herself while attending Archbishop Keough High School, says that the money that goes into the collection plate, the church is using to lobby against children. Sun is reporting that over the past 3 years alone, the Archdiocese of Baltimore, the Diocese of Wilmington, Delaware, and the Archdiocese of Washington have combined to pay three men, former Governor Martin O'Malley, spokesman Rick Abruzzi, and former Senator Robert Zirkin, $166,000 solely to fight legislation that would expand the statute of limitations for childhood sexual abuse survivors. So essentially you have quote-unquote men of the cloth, men of God, paying elected officials, men who were elected to defend and support the well-being of the constituents in their state, to deny children of that state who were abused by these Catholic priests their ability to get justice. Also during this past week, I heard from my schoolmate that was victimized when I was in Catholic school by a Catholic priest that taught at that school. And he told me in no uncertain terms that though he did reach a settlement, he was told that he could not speak about it. They paid him to shut up. So to my listeners that are Catholic that have reached out to me and expressed a little bit of angst because I was speaking about this and that I didn't mention other religions that are similar in their sexual predatory behavior, I gotta tell you this. The Catholic organization is in a league all of its own. It's beyond the major leagues of molestation, cover-up, and corruption within its ranks. There is no other organization that comes close to what the Catholic organization has been doing for generations. And yes, it must be uncomfortable to know that the money that you tithe, the money that you put in the offering plate or the money basket in these Catholic churches, a portion of what you give, of what you earn and give to this organization goes to defend these priests that have committed these outrageous crimes against children, or to lobby against these victims so that they cannot seek their day in court. I'm sure that because you have a conscience, it is uncomfortable to accept that fact as a Catholic parishioner. But like my guest said last week, Reverend Dr. Lori Harrison, change begins at the bottom. It starts at the bottom with you. What you gonna do? Okay, moving on. In brighter news, WNBA superstar Brittany Griner was released from Russian prison on Thursday in a very high-profile prisoner exchange with Russia. They got back notorious arms dealer Victor Boot, known as the Merchant of Death. Now, when the story first aired, it gave the impression that Biden actually had a choice as to who he was going to swap prisoners with, whether it be Paul Whelan, the Marine who was charged with espionage 4 years ago, who's been in Russian prison for almost 4 years, or Brittany Griner. Well, Biden didn't actually have that choice. Russia made it very clear that it was either one or none, meaning it was either going to be Brittany Griner or it was going to be no one. So, of course, he chose to bring Brittany Griner home. Now, that has sparked outrage for many Americans here who feel that Brittany Griner, a basketball player, is not the same value in a prisoner swap as a notorious arms dealer who put thousands of Americans' lives at risk. And though you do have those that question Biden's decision, Paul Whelan's brother says this.
It makes sense to me that the president would say there is an American who could come home, and that's really the only deal that is available right now.
So he gets it. There really was no decision to be made. You either bring her home or you leave her there on principle. But what do you gain by that? Here's the deal. Victor Boot has been in U.S. prisons for 15 years after having been sentenced to 25. Brittany Griner was sentenced to 9 years in prison, which give or take a year, they would have been getting out of prison at the same time anyway, had they both served the full terms of their sentences. Now, being very honest, a lot of the protesting is coming from places of, well, if you do this with one American, then you put all Americans who travel abroad at risk, because now anyone has to do is snatch up an American and they can get whatever prisoner we have for their prisoner. And quite honestly, there is a lot of truth to that logic. And I really don't know how that's avoidable. We had to get her back. We just had to. And we had something with which we could swap. So what do you do? I believe Biden made the right decision. But as always, I want to know what you think about it. So hit me up on IG, add on with Brian Pettaway, and I promise to read your comments and reply to your comments, because I really want to know how you feel about it. I don't have all the answers, so let me know what you think. So before I bring my guest on, I wanted to let you know why I'm doing this show with this topic today. And I don't know if you know what the Indigenous Child Welfare Act is. What it's actually called in Congress is the Indian Child Welfare Act. And basically that was enacted in 1978 by Congress, who was alerted that 35% of all Native American children were being removed from the reservation, from their families that were intact, able to take care of them, and being adopted by non-Natives, primarily white folks. And what was happening is a lot of Native culture was being lost because these children were being raised by white families, and their cultures and their heritage and identities were being erased, and they were being raised as white kids. So the Indigenous Child Welfare Act of 1978 gave tribal governments exclusive jurisdiction over children who resided on or were domiciled on reservations. And that law, that act, was intact and working well for Native Americans until recently, because now that law is being challenged in the Supreme Court by a white couple, Chad and Jennifer Brackeen, who are trying to adopt a Native American child who they had been fostering. The Hallen versus Brackeen case, the one I'm referring to, started in November in front of the Supreme Court, and the attorney for the Brackeens, Chad and Jennifer, Matthew McGill, told the justices that the Indigenous Child Welfare Act flouts the promise of equal justice under the law by treating Native American children differently. And McGill insists that the ICWA falls outside of Congress's power to regulate Native American affairs, arguing that Congress does not have the power to regulate Indians everywhere. And I hear you. I know you're saying, Brian, what does this have to do with anything? Why are you telling me this? Why are you reporting on this of all things? I need us to understand how important this case actually is. This is a landmark, monumental case. It is, to me, as important as Roe v. Wade. The ICWA was enacted essentially because Native American children were being stolen from their birth parents and from their places of birth. Their identities, were being stripped and their culture and heritage was being erased. Does that sound familiar to you? But here's the other side to that coin. Once a native child is adopted, his native rights and inheritance, land, tribal land on the reservation, those rights belong to the guardians of that child. Guess what has been discovered recently on reservation and tribal land? Oil. Lots and lots of oil. If you think for one second it is a coincidence that all of a sudden now that this particular adoption case is before the Supreme Court, then you're not paying attention. But I'm not going to go into it anymore. Right now, I want to introduce my special guest this week. Her name is Lycan Koss. She is a member of the Chiricahua Apache tribe out of Oregon. And she is going to explain to us, enlighten us more about what I was referring to, and tell us some other things about the relationship between blacks and natives, and why we should have been and should continue to be in a relationship with each other like we used to be. So without further ado, let's put our hands together for Ms. Lycan Koss. Good morning, Lycan, and thank you so much for coming here today and talking with me this morning. I appreciate your time as always. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Doing very well. So you're out in Oregon, is that correct?
This is correct. I live in right outside of a small town called Grants Pass, Oregon.
Okay. Large population or small town?
I'd say 30,000, 35,000.
All right. So you're about, 3 hours behind me then?
Yes.
What's the weather like out there this time of year?
Right now it's cold. It's about 40. It's like 15 in the morning and it's like 45 degrees and it's rainy and cold. We haven't got any snow yet, but it's coming.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. So listen, I was hip to what's kind of going on. I follow the news. And again, like I told you, I'm aware of the Indian Child Welfare Act. Do you want to explain that to the people? I mean, I could, but if you want to explain that, you're far more educated about it than I am. And I want to get your take on what that means and what it has meant to Native Americans.
The Indian Child Welfare Act was established in the 70s, and it was established for all the tribal nations that our children would not be removed. And, you know, just like any other family, Native folks have problems. Sometimes mom and dad can't take care of their young ones, and so they need to go to grandma and grandpa or auntie and uncle. And prior to that, Native children were removed, and removed heavily, probably more than any other demographic. And so when this act was created, it was created so that the tribe itself could make decisions on the welfare of the children before they were taken to non-Indigenous homes, so that it could preserve our culture and our language and our people. And now that's being challenged.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it was enacted in, I believe, 1978. And I think Congress recognized, well, it actually wasn't Congress, but it was brought to their attention that Native children were being removed from the home from families that were actually intact. It wasn't even families that could not take care of their children. It was families that were intact, but they were being removed at a rate of like 35%, which was the highest, far higher than any other non-Native children at that time. So they did this to protect that. Here's the problem that I have, though. Now there's a case, there have been several cases, but one now that it's being heavily presided over in the Supreme Court, where they're trying to sidestep that law. What would that mean to natives if that were the case, if this were to be successful? Was it the Holland-Brackeen case, I believe it is?
It is a Holland-Brackeen case, yeah. What that means, it's really deep on what it means. It also means that our people, whatever tribal nation our Indigenous children belong to, are removed, so they don't learn their language. They don't learn their traditional music or dances or any other traditional customs. And if you remove the children, then what is the reason to continue to let the tribal nations continue to hold on to their land?
Exactly.
If there's no one to live there.
So it's not only a culture eraser, but it's also a money and land grab that's kind of been going on right now, or potentially could go on. Is that right?
Right. And what it is that the individuals that have brought this as the Supreme Court said that it was racist that the Native nations get to decide what happens to their children, and that we have our sovereignty over our children. And it is a non-Indigenous family, and they said that God needed them to adopt Native children. And so they've taken it to the Supreme Court. But the interesting part of it is that the lawyers that are backing them up are oil. They work for some of the big oil companies that were trying to fight at Standing Rock and some other places, because it's known that like the Navajo Nation is has the largest land mass, but underneath that land is a lot of oil and uranium. And so if you remove the people and there's no one to live there or claim the land, then that treaty can be broken. And so that's the underlying thing there. If they can break this Child Welfare Act, then they can start breaking all of the other treaties one by one. And it's about land and money and not letting the Indigenous tribal nations continue to hold on to their land. And that's the bottom line. So they're going to start with our children and then kind of chisel away at every other. And that's what these lawyers are doing and a lot of our opinions.
So what is it that you're doing? What group are you affiliated with trying to stop this from happening?
My partner and I co-founded a nonprofit organization right at the height of the pandemic. And it's called Native Women Share, because we recognized within ourselves, being Indigenous ourselves, that there's a lot of displaced Native people that don't have tribal affiliation, that are not federally recognized. And when you're not federally recognized, according to the United States government, we don't exist as Indigenous folks. We just don't exist. And that's not true, because our existence is our resistance. And we started to do that to bring BIPOC folk, Black, Brown, and Indigenous people back to the land and start teaching our cultural heritages. And so we work closely with the tribal people that is on this land, that's a Kilma tribe, and we work closely with them. And just spreading education and awareness is our big thing.
Right.
And doing it in a loving way. You know, because we've had so much unloving shown to us, we're trying to educate with love. So that's where we're at. And that's what we do.
And, you know, awareness is everything. Like I said, I kind of knew about this, but I didn't know fully the ramifications of what would happen if this actual Supreme Court reneged on this ICWA. But I think my big takeaway from it is how closely we are related as Black people to Natives. There was a time when we had a very strong relationship. I know a lot of Black women brag about having Indian in their hair. You know, I got Indian in me, look at my hair. But it's far beyond that. That Indian in your hair has to do with the relationship between former slaves and Natives, and how you guys took us in, how we worked alongside of each other, how we cultivated the land. I know that before we got here, Native Americans were enslaved.
Right.
And you were forced to work the land. And I think when they killed you off too much, they had to go and get us. And then they brought us over here and enslaved us to continue that work, if I'm not mistaken. So we have a lot in common. They've tried to, and apparently still are trying to erase you as a people. And they've tried to do it many ways. And here you still are here. And they've tried to do the same thing to us. So my point in doing the show this morning is to let my people know that if we're going to align ourselves with anyone, it should be the people who protected us in the very beginning. And that was Natives. And I saw a video of a young man who was Native, and he says that being called Native American is kind of an insult or an offense to him, because he was here, or his people were here, before it was ever the Americas. So to be called a Native American kind of bothers him. What is the proper term that is non-offensive?
I think that it depends. You know, like, I'm not a monolith, and I prefer to be called Indigenous.
Okay.
You know, because I am Indigenous of Turtle Island, and I think that one of the histories that's not taught in our schools is that Canada, what we call the United States, and Mexico, you know, South America, that's all Turtle Island. And so when the colonization came, you're absolutely correct. That is exactly what happened to us. And, you know, that guy, Christopher Columbus, he thought he was going to India when he landed on these shores. And that's how we got the name Indians, because they thought that we were Indians from India, and that's how we got the name Native Americans, or Native, you know, American Indians. And we're not Indian. We are the people.
Right.
We are the original people. And that's the way a lot of different tribes call themselves. But your history is correct. And what happened was, when they started to kill off our men, or take our men. And that's one of the things that's not really taught in American history, is they took a lot of our indigenous men and took them back to Africa and sold them, and then brought African slaves here because they thought it was a way of controlling. But then that's not too far-fetched why a lot of Black community have Native blood in them.
Correct.
Because they integrated at some point. You know, if slaves ran away, there was a tribe, they might have taken them in, or vice versa. And there was also a lot of, like, what Hollywood's depiction of what a Native American looks like or what an indigenous person looks like,
right,
is actually white people's glorified opinion of what we look like. And there was so many different skin tones and cultures, and beautiful. And like in Florida, they were very dark skinned and would be considered Black.
Exactly.
And so, you know, Mardi Gras is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And that is a very, very good example of the melting pot and the two cultures coming together. There was Black Indians, and it was against the law for Blacks to wear feathers. And that was part of the systematic erasure of the cultures. And so during Mardi Gras, they could don their feathers. They could go back to their indigenous roots.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's not known.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was illegal for Blacks to wear feathers. And so during Mardi Gras, that's where all the feathers come from, because the Black and indigenous tribes could don their feathers. There's a really good, I would recommend, if you really want to know about the integration of like Black and indigenous worlds, check out this documentary called Rumble. And it's an indigenous made thing, and they really get down on the integration of the two cultures and how our culture, our music, our language actually created what we call modern rock and roll today.
Right.
And so that's a really good show to watch. But I think that you know, Hollywood has really damaged non-Native, non-Black people on what a Native looks like, what Natives sound like. And it's interesting to me because I go to powwow,
mm-hmm,
and I have all kinds of relations, right? And they're all kinds of skin tones. And when we're at powwow, I see what you would call Afro-Indigenous, but we don't say that. We're like, that's just our relation.
Right.
That's our kin. We don't separate by the color of our skin, you know? And I think that that's a government thing to keep many different races oppressed.
Oh, and that's absolutely.
It's a blood quantum thing. Because if you have a white mom and a Black dad, you're Black. If you have a white mom and a Native father, you're white.
Ah.
And so that's some of the systematic racism I see. But I think that I have a lot of Black friends that have come to me and talked to me and said, there's something about y'all's spirituality that speaks to me. And I said, because it's very close to your ancestors' original spirituality.
Correct.
Because we were all earth people.
Correct. I've always, not always, but for a long time, I wondered why we were not closer as a race. I really wondered that, because you hear, if you follow the trail, if you follow the historical trail, we come together very, very early in the late 1500s, early 1600s.
Mm-hmm.
And we never really separated until like the 1920s, which was weird to me. But for a long time, we were connected as a people. And we fought together for a long time alongside of each other. You guys housed runaway slaves and protected us for a long time. And so I never understood why we weren't more in alignment with each other, why we didn't support each other more, why as a Black people, we didn't support you guys more. It's very interesting to me how we get lost in history that way, or history is lost to us that way. And how it's actually been done in a very intentional way, I believe.
Mm-hmm. There's a little known fact. It was at one time better to be Black than it was to be Native. Can you believe that?
Right.
That sounds crazy, right? That sounds crazy. If you claimed Native, there was a time in the United States it was okay to kill us, to hunt us like dogs. But if you were dark-skinned enough, you never said you were Native. You said you were Black.
Wow.
Which is a bizarre, like...
Very interesting.
Very interesting. So it's kind of like for Native Americans and that integration between the two cultures, I think it's kind of like it kind of reminds me of the Jewish Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
When Jewish people started not claiming being Jewish, they would claim to, you know, they might practice their faith behind closed doors secretly, but to protect their families, they would say that they were Catholic or that they were something else to protect their children, you know, from that type of erasure. And right. It's happened, you know, especially within religion. And I think I've seen that before, but there was a time that that was true. I can tell you that I am Chiricahua Apache. So I'm going to introduce myself that way. Dagate chi lakem bacho konsenede. And that is my traditional language.
Wow.
And what I said was, my name is Lycan Wolf, and I am of the people. We recognize that as Apache now, but Apache is actually a Comanche word that was adopted by the United States government as the enemy.
And that was given, that was the name given to your tribe?
Yeah, I mean, that was a Comanche word. And now, you know, the tribe sticks, you know, stays with that. There's, but.
Well, why is that? Why does the tribe stay with that? Why did the tribe stay with that?
I think that it's just, you know, it's like the. Like the Navajo, they're traditional in their own language. They're called Diné.
Mm-hmm.
But over time and oppression and forced assimilation, you know, and some Navajo call themselves Navajo and some would like to prefer to be called Diné, okay. You know, so it's just part of the erasure, right?
Right.
So now it's widely accepted. It's widely accepted. So my people, my particular band from my tribe is from Chihuahua, Mexico, because there was no border on our lands, on our traditional homelands. And both in the United States and in Mexico, in those two countries that came about that our people did not recognize as a country, we had territories on where we lived. It was okay to cross the border if you were hunting and killing Apache. You did not have to have another reason. If you were a Mexican resident, you know, of that country, right. You could cross into the United States if you were hunting and killing Apache and vice versa.
Wow.
And neither other government would
stop you
from crossing that border if you said you were hunting Apache.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's really, really crazy. The value or lack of value that they put on indigenous people's lives. There was no value placed there.
There's no value. And so I think that that's where some of the separation became. I don't really think that Black separated by choice. I think it was by design, because let's be real. I mean, I'm going to get some real talk in here. Like, would you want a bunch of Black Native Americans owning land and there wasn't nothing you could do to them?
Right, right.
Could you see an entire nation of Black Natives having their own territorial land? I don't think the United States government would want that.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure they wouldn't. I'm sure they wouldn't. It would definitely be a nightmare in the making for them, without a doubt. Let me ask you something. You say that you've told me that you're part of the LGBTQ community, correct? And
correct.
You mentioned something to me that I found very, 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 very curious and cool at the same time. You said that represents two spirits. Is that how
two spirit? Two spirit.
And explain that to my listeners. What exactly does that mean?
So a two spirit, you can be two spirit and you don't necessarily have to be gay. Do you wonder? It's really hard to even explain in the English language. It's something that natives really understand. And two spirits in a lot of the tribes, not all of them, but two spirits are sacred. We're a gift to the tribe from Creator. And so two spirits could hold roles that were, you know, I was born in a female body and I could hold roles that were maybe predominantly for males within the tribe. But two spirits were usually the medicine men and women. They were also counselors. If there was conflict, they led ceremonies, sacred ceremony. There was a lot, you know, and it depends on the tribe. It depends on the tribe and the different things. But it wasn't seen as something. It was our unions as two spirits were seen as sacred. They were not seen as the way Christianity has depicted LGBTQ and But within that, two-spirit is more than being part of the LGBTQ community. It's different. We're accepted by that community, but it's like we have two spirits. We have the spirit of male and female within us, and that's what it is. And then the two-spirit word was created at a gathering in Canada, and it was something that the elders had come up with that was the closest definition or way to describe what we are within our tribe. Okay. In the English language, because there really isn't words to translate that, because a lot of native languages, the English language others things, and the native language are more descriptive. So we don't other things, like we are relations to the water, we're relatives to the water, the trees, the sky, the birds, the animals, and so we don't other things. And so it's really hard to sometimes translate the true meaning. So it's a yes and. We're part of the LGBTQ, but it's not necessarily the same. You don't have to be gay to be a two-spirit. You just have to inhabit the body of
a male
and female spirit.
It has so little to do with the sexuality of the identity.
It has so little to do with sexuality. Thank you for that.
I mean, that's what it sounds like. So I think I get it. I mean, I think I do. How did you grow up? Did you grow up on a reservation yourself? Like, how did you grow up?
I did not grow up on a reservation per se, because where my family's from, it would not be acceptable. You know, the natives that I grew up with. So at some point, my mother came to the United States, and I was actually born here, but I was always taken back to Mexico. And so I was just really lucky that I got a lot of teachings from my grandmother and my mother. But there was something. So I also speak Spanish as well. And so that was something that I remember being a young child and hearing them say, "Mira los indios." And it was like, it's derogatory. It's like, oh, look at, there's the dirty Indians, you know, look, there's the Indians.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it's like, my mom came here and wanted to give me a better life. And that was, you know, now that I'm older and we've had conversations and she's apologized to me, but you know, I was born in the 60s.
Right.
And so that was a really hard time. That was a really hard time, you know, like with all the things that were going on around, you know, then. So, I was not born on a reservation because of Mexico. It's not the same that it is here. There are still places where it's okay to kill natives in Mexico.
Really?
It's not offensible. We're not seen as human beings. And so I think that she thought if she came to the United States, did her thing here, she told me she just wanted to give us a better life. And I said, so, you know, now that I'm an adult, I'm like, it's a yes and, Mom. Like, we got separated once again out of survival, my mother's decision to survive as a human being. And now we're playing catch up. Right. You know what I mean? We're playing catch up, and I'm a parent and a grandparent, and now I'm doing everything I can to make sure that my children and my grandchildren don't lose their culture.
And is that why or how you got involved in being an activist in this way?
Yeah, I was at a university here recently, and I was speaking with a bunch of young two-spirit. Because it's we're becoming stronger, you know, and we were having a conversation, and I told him, I said, you know what? I wanted to be white. I would have done anything to be white when I was young.
Right.
I wanted to not be who I was. And I tried. I tried so hard to separate myself from all of that and, you know, do all the right things. But I think it's just within my DNA and my spirit, my ancestor's spirit lives so strongly inside me that it wasn't possible. But I did go on a journey, and I did go on a journey to realize that I am part of the seventh generation. I am educated, and you can't put me down anymore. And the reason I exist is because my ancestors survived, and I can't let what little's left die, because that's not what they wanted.
Well, you know, there's a large percentage of the country because we don't see indigenous people, believe that you don't exist anymore. And that if you do, you're in such a small quantity that it's insignificant. We hear stories of drunkenness. We hear stories of unemployment, all of these things about what's going on in the reservation. And we don't know if it's true or not because we're not allowed on the reservation and no news comes off of the reservation. So it's kind of, it's a very interesting thing for most people because we don't know how you live. We don't know how indigenous people live in this country until there is something going on where the government is trying to take your land and then all of a sudden, oh, they are here. You know what I mean? It's very interesting to me.
Yeah, I think natives don't trust. You know, so many things have happened. They don't trust. But, you know, on some tribal reservations, there's no water. Think about Flint, Michigan.
Right.
It's worse. Can you imagine that?
No.
I mean, that's ridiculous. And so the tribes themselves, I've seen some tribes, you know, like I just watched the chief of the Cherokee Nation talking, especially around the Child Welfare Act, the Indigenous Child Welfare Act. And I was watching how beautiful it was that these children were, along with English, learning their traditional language. And some of those programs will go away. And these children are becoming proud to be Native. And so it's like this big full circle. I think that some folks have probably heard about the Catholic schools that, you know, the residential schools, that perfectly healthy children were taken from perfectly healthy, functioning parents and put into these residential schools. Their hair was cut. Their were not allowed to speak their native language. And the trauma, the physical abuse, the mental abuse, the spiritual abuse, and that is now being brought to light. And there's still a school, there's still a Catholic school that is called St. Joseph's. And it still is inhabiting Native children in the United States, but they say that they're working for them now and they've raised $50 million. And it's like, it's like this big scar that people don't want to reopen. And so the trauma, you know, from sexual abuse, you know, here's a good thing. You know how we do the if you get a drink, you're gonna go get a Gatorade, right? And you read the back of the Gatorade, right? And it says this is how much sugar's in it, that was because they tested that on Native children in these schools.
Oh wow.
They would malnutrition children and then feed them different types of food so that we can find out what our daily allowances are to be healthy people.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So with that being said, natives have now, I would say, our Native youth are having pride in who they are for like the first times in their life, because they're seeing images of themselves. Like the Interior Secretary of the United States is a Native woman.
Right.
And we're starting to see our own faces. We're starting to see people that we recognize as our own. And we're like, oh, we can aspire to be that. And, you know,
it sounds...
you can talk about our drunkenness and the alcohol, but so the Irish, you know what I mean? We could talk about that all day long too, but it's a thing. And so it's the trauma and the generational pain that has been passed down for 500 and something years.
It's so crazy because it sounds so familiar as a Black man. You know what I mean? It sounds so familiar. They run so parallel to each other. And what I'm hearing from you, I mean, you know, my grandparents told me, whose parents told them. It's just a crazy history of parallel running between our cultures in some degree. Of course, yours is suffering at a higher degree now than we are as a Black people. And that's the question I want to ask. If we wanted to get involved, how could we get involved in helping to support indigenous people or natives?
How could you get involved? I would find out where you're at. The first thing I would say is, regardless of where you're at, do some educational work. Find out whose land you were traditionally on, whose traditional homeland you're on.
Okay.
Do that, you know. And then if there is a reservation or a local tribe, you know, Native peoples are very loving and kind and open. And find out from them exactly what they need. And I think that that's something that, you know, in the Black communities, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? Ask them what they need. Ask them what they want. How can I help support? You know, I have a lot of relatives that are what you would call Afro-Indigenous. Right. And I'm like, how can I support you, relation? I'm not Black, but you're my relation. You're my cousin. You carry my blood. How can I help you with Black Lives Matter?
Right.
And not steal your voice. And so
I love how you said that.
Yeah, how can I support you?
Without stealing your voice. Like, I love how you said that.
Stealing your voice. And I think that that's a really good thing, is just to, like, sit down and, like, okay, I live in, you're in Maryland, right?
Correct.
What were the local tribes? What were their lives like? What was the integration? And especially for Black folk, do your Black history and see what it was like, because I think that Black folks and Native folks were holding each other's hand, and the Black experience and the Native experience, they're two different experiences, but they're one experience in the same, because what it is systematic oppression. Correct. And erasure of these cultures.
Correct.
And if you support each other, wow, what a beautiful thing that would be.
And a powerful
thing that would be.
Well, Lycan, the time has gone by so fast. I got to have you back, but I appreciate the time you've given us here today and all the things that you've taught us today and being so open and honest with us. And I'm certainly going to research more. I'm going to encourage my listeners to research more and to be more of an outreach and to align ourselves with who we should have been aligned with all along. And I'm going to keep in touch with you, obviously, and find out what's going
on.
Absolutely. All right. But thank you so much for coming on today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right, Lycan. You're now an official member of 1500 Radio, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, I know you hear the music, and every week it means the same thing. It is time for the Petty. I'm going to give him a holler and find out what he's got in his bag brewing for today's game, tomorrow night's game, and Thursday night's game. And I'm going to see what he has to say about how my Ravens pulled that win out last week without Lamar Jackson against Denver. So let's give him a call and see what he's got to say.
Good morning, Brother B.
If it isn't the Petty, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing just great, and I'm tell you why I'm doing great, because if you were listening, if you were paying attention, and if your listeners were paying attention, last week was a good week for me. It was a great week, going 12-2-1. Unfortunately, the one being that one tie with the Commanders and those New York football Giants. But against the spread, I took the Commanders, and it was a win for me. So,
no, you did great. You did great.
Week 13 was lucky 13 for me.
Yes, it was. And for those that listened and placed their bets according to your predictions. So what you got for us this week, though?
Well, this is week number 14, and number 4 is a big number this week. First of all, let's say we started out with a win Thursday night, because that pastry chef that got waived by the Panthers showed up in the LA.
Yes, he did. And
Baker
showed
Mayfield,
out.
The pastry chef, drove those Lambs down the field to beat the Raiders. And I'm still kind of flabbergasted. I'm surprised. But you know what? I picked the Rams to win that game, so I'm cool with it.
Hey, he did his thing.
He did his thing.
I ain't mad at him. He did his thing.
Now, you know what, Brother B? This week is a big week, because, like I said, the number is number 14, week number 14, and the number 4 is significant because there are only 4 weeks left in the season.
Okay.
And
all right,
there's a lot of divisional games this week. There are a lot of playoff implications going on. And I'm telling you, this is the week right here, because some teams are going to be going home packing for the season. And even though the season won't be over, their playoff hopes will be dashed. Let's start with the 1 o'clock slate. And we're going to talk about a big play. I'm talking about this is a big game.
Okay.
A lot of people may not think so, but it is. And we're talking about those J-E-T-S. Jets will be flying into Buffalo to meet those hot Wild Wings Bills. A divisional game, but also some playoff implications involved there. And, man, the Jets looked good last week against Minnesota. Unfortunately, they couldn't pull off the win. and they're flying up to meet their in-state rivals, even though they just play in Jersey. Well, let's just say I think the Bills are a little better. I think the Jets will give them a run for their money, but I like the Bills over the Jets.
Okay. All right.
Another divisional game. Another in-state rival. The Battle of Ohio. The crusty Browns from Cleveland will go to the jungle to play the Cincinnati Bengals. And it looks like Cincinnati's starting to turn it around. They're starting to look pretty good.
Burrows is looking good.
And you know what? I apologize to all the listeners last week. I picked the Browns because I thought they were a better team than the team they played last week. I thought they were better than Houston. I didn't know Deshaun Watson was coming back. And you figure Cleveland might have a better chance of winning this week because Deshaun Watson is back. Well, I don't think so. Cincinnati's got a lot on the line here. For the bragging rights of Ohio, playoffs involved, maybe possibly winning the AFC North Division, which is another story. Because, you know, your Ravens are in that same division.
Yes, we are.
But I like Cincinnati over Cleveland.
So you think that there'll be that much of an uptick for Cleveland now that Brissett's not behind the center? Like, I like Brissett.
I like Brissett, too. I think Deshaun Watson has to get his feet a little bit more wet in that system. And I just think Cleveland, I really think your career dies in Cleveland. That's the place where your career dies. Right. That's just my opinion. Here's another in-state game. It's not a divisional game, but it's an in-state game. We're talking about the Battle of Texas, Houston and Dallas. Man, look, Dallas is a 17.5-point favorite. That's a huge number. But we're not going to talk about against the spread. We're going to talk about straight up. Take Dallas over the Texans.
All right.
Here's one that, man, I had to think about. I went back and forth about it. Another divisional game. A team that you know I like. I've been talking about them all year.
Those pesky
Lions will be hosting the Norsemen from Minnesota, the Vikings. And the Vikings have been winning some games, but you got to look at how they have been winning their games. The Jets should have beat them. Buffalo should have beat them. And they just been getting by the skin of their teeth. Well, they go see those pesky Lions in the Motor City. Man, listen, Brother B, I went back and forth about this game. And I said, you know what? I had Minnesota at first, but I like those pesky Lions pulling off the upset.
Okay,
and
all
believe
right.
it or
all
not, right. they are the favorite in this game. So yeah. It really wouldn't be an upset.
Nobody wants to play the Lions right now. Nobody.
Nobody wants to play them. I'm gonna tell you, Dan Campbell got those boys playing, and I'm telling you guys right now, if you're betting on this game, if you got a chance to go against the spread or over and under, definitely take the over. There's gonna be some points scored in this game, and I really think those pesky Lions will beat the Vikings.
Okay, all right.
Next up on our slate, another divisional game: Jacksonville at Tennessee. I like those Spider Cats. I like what Dougie P is doing with them down in Jacksonville. But Tennessee, this is a bounce-back game for them. They were embarrassed in Philly. So, you know, they ready to beat up on somebody.
Right.
Derrick Henry's ready to run over somebody. That defense ready to beat up on somebody. So let's just take the Titans over Jacksonville.
Okay. All right.
Here we go again. Another divisional game. Another game with some playoff implications involved. And I'm talking about those Pigeons from Philadelphia, those Eagles, going up 95 north to see those New York football Giants. There is always a tight game between them when they play up in the Meadowlands. It'll probably be a tight game again. But you know what? Jalen Hurts, he got a chip on his shoulder.
I can tell
you a backstory about that one that you would not believe.
But you can't bet against them.
I can't bet against the Eagles right now because just like A.J. Brown had something to prove against Tennessee, well, Jalen Hurts got something to prove against the coach of the New York Giants. Did you know that he was part of the offensive staff at Alabama?
That sent him packing?
There.
Yeah, I did. He sent Jalen Hurts packing.
He sent them on the bench in favor of Tua.
Yep.
During the championship game. Don't you know Jalen Hurts is like, oh, I can't wait to get up to New York.
That is correct.
I can't wait to play them. So look for those Eagles to take care of the Giants up in Jersey. And finally, on the 1 o'clock slate, we have your Angry Birds from Baltimore, those Ravens, up to the Steel City to see their divisional rival.
That game worries me. Even though the Steelers have not played well this year, they always play the Ravens tough. I don't care who they have on staff.
That used to be one of the biggest rivalries in the NFL. Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. It didn't matter where they played. It was always a knockdown, drag-out fight of a game. I used to love it. You got Kenny Two Gloves Pickett up in Pittsburgh. He might be their franchise quarterback. You got those Angry Birds without Lamar Jackson, where rumors are floating around that he might not be a Raven next year.
Well,
now, I'll tell you a little something, Brother B. If that should come to pass, you know where you heard it first, because I've been hearing it that he might not want to sign with the Ravens. Now, I want you to think about this real quick. When somebody's on a contract year, they ball out. Well, Lamar, he was balling out, and he's got this little injury going on, and I don't know. He might not want to play for the Ravens anymore. But that being said, I'm going to make this short and simple. Take the Steelers over your Angry Birds from Baltimore.
I'm worried. I'm not crazy. I don't believe in that one.
Ravens are going to win. We got three games in the afternoon and another divisional game. Kansas City goes to Denver. Kansas City is upset because they lost a game they should have won last week.
Right.
So Russell Wilson has been trash all year. He's not Mr. Unlimited. He ain't cooking out in Denver. So look for Kansas City to take care of the Broncos.
Okay.
Next up, we got those Black Cats from Carolina going out to West Coast to see Seattle. They're going to go see the comeback player of the year, in my opinion, and Geno Smith.
Okay.
I like Seattle over Carolina. And finally, in that late afternoon game, this is a huge one. This is big. You got that old man, that old geezer that's still playing. We're talking about Tom Brady and those guys from Florida going out, another Florida team going out west to the Golden Gate City to play those 49ers. You got a potential Hall of Famer that seemed like he's been in the league forever against Mr. Irrelevant, the last man taken in the draft, number 262. Boy, oh boy, that's something.
Yeah.
You know what? And I looked at the schedule and I saw the game. I said, wow, porn star Jimmy G gets to play against his mentor, and it's not going to happen. You got an unproven rookie against we're not even going to say potential, but a future Hall of Famer. Well, you know what? Any rookie quarterback that has started against Tom Brady has been 0-7. Well, that's about to change because that defense is going to make sure that Mr. Irrelevant quarterback. Let me tell you something. I know you don't like the Niners. We all know it. But that defense that shut down Miami, that shut out the Saints, they're going to make sure that 0-7 will now be 1-7 because the 49ers will beat Tampa Bay.
Okay. All right.
And tonight, we have those fish who decided to stay out in California, talking about the Miami Dolphins, playing the L.A. Chargers.
Okay.
I like Miami. I liked them in the bounce-back game. I think they felt like that's a game they should have won last week. And I just think they're a little better than the Chargers. So let's take the Dolphins over the Chargers. And on Monday night, tomorrow night, you got Belichick and his Patriots going out to the desert to see those Redbirds. The Cardinals got to win the game at home sometime.
At some point.
Not Monday night?
Okay. All right.
So I like the Cardinals over the Patriots. And as a bonus pick, let's go with next Thursday night. Boy, oh boy, this is huge. This game right here next Thursday will decide who will win the NFC West. And then I'm talking about the guys from the Golden Gate City going up north to play the Seattle Seahawks. I'm not even going to call them Sea Chickens this time because that's a tough game between those two. And I'm telling you, Brother B, right now, whoever wins that game will win the NFC West.
Okay.
They will be the third seed in the playoffs.
Okay. I believe you.
So that's what I got for you, Brother B. There's a lot of backstories going on. There's a lot of rumors going on. There's a whole lot of stuff going on in the NFL. But this week, let me tell you something, Brother B. Everybody better tune in. They better watch these games because, man, oh, man, there's some bomb burners right there.
There's some good stuff going on. I noticed that you didn't mention how, you know, the Ravens pulled that game out last week. But it's okay.
Well,
it's all right.
You know what? I picked the Ravens to win next last week.
You did.
I'm a little disappointed on how they did it. I think that's a team that they should have beat up on. They were in Baltimore. You got Russell Wilson's trash. I'm not going to take nothing away from Denver's defense. Yes, Lamar did get hurt. Tyler Huntley, who I think is a very serviceable quarterback, came in and he got the job done and he did what he had to do. But I don't think it should have been as close as it was.
Okay.
And it kind of tells me that looking at the Ravens' next four games, it's a strong possibility they could fall out of the playoff
picture
like they did last year.
Not happening. All right, man. I'm glad I talked to you today.
Let's keep it real, brother. I was hoping that it doesn't go down like that. You know,
right.
So, but it's a strong possibility. If you look at their next four games, it ain't a cakewalk.
Okay.
I got to get out of here, man. I got to go put my wages in and, you know, before the windows close up and get this money. And love the show, Brother B. Keep on doing what you're doing. I'm out.
Appreciate you, bro. Audi. Talk to you. Well, there you have it. That was the Petty. You heard his picks. Hey, I hope you make some money off of him. I don't like what he said about the Ravens or Lamar Jackson, but hey, he's a hater. No problem. I hope the San Francisco 49ers lose. It is what it is. But listen, that is the end of this hour. It has gone by so fast. I'm so thankful that you are here with me today, and like you are every Sunday, giving me your time. And please remember, I want to hear what you're thinking, how you're feeling. Get at me on IG, at On with Brian Pettaway. I will promise to reply to all of your comments in some kind of way. I might even read them on the air if they're that good or that provoking, that thought-provoking. It helps me grow. It helps the show grow and helps us get better. If you have any suggestions for a topic, I want to know those too. And if you are involved in something that you want to talk about that may be interesting, let me know. I might have you on as a guest. That being said, again, hit me up on IG at On with Brian Pettaway. I want to thank my guest, Lycan Koss, out of Oregon. She gave us her time, and she's 3 hours behind me. So you know how early she was up. So thank you very much, Lycan. And pay attention, people. I told you that with the way things are going, the world is going to start to spin backwards. It's already doing that after taking away all of our protections, especially minorities and women. Please pay attention to what's happening with the Supreme Court, the Supreme Justices. The previous administration set this thing up. They were playing chess while Democrats were playing checkers. We have to vote, and we have to vote effectively, but we have to vote. So please, please don't sit on your hands and complain. Do something about it when it's time to vote, and vote these backwards conservative people out of office, all right? Listen, I enjoyed you. Thank you for being with me. I've got to get out of here. But before I go, you know what I always say? The best part about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So enjoy today, watch the games, eat your food, do nothing. But tomorrow morning on Monday, wake up conquering the world. That's what your boy's going to do. That's what I do every Monday, or at least I try to do. Make that happen for yourself and see what happens. I enjoyed you today. I hope you enjoyed me. Have a great week, people. Peace.